This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. It's Thursday, January 23rd. For those of you who did not watch a lot of the House managers' opening arguments yesterday or just find it all overwhelming, I think the main takeaway from day one was that Adam Schiff and company presented a highly detailed, meticulously organized presentation of the evidence that was collected in the House hearings that shows a months-long pressure campaign on Zelensky, conditioning U.S. military aid and a meeting with Trump on very specific announcements of investigations into the Bidens and a 2016 election conspiracy theory. The big challenge for them, I think, is that so many Republican senators and perhaps regular Republican Americans who would have to pressure those senators are just tuning it out, like see no evil, hear no evil. But I want to play just a couple of clips from yesterday to show how the House managers did it and the strength of the evidence, if anybody cares. Here, for example, is a 30-second clip of Adam Schiff describing a text message from July 25th, just before the famous Trump-Zelensky phone call. It's a text from Trump's special envoy to Ukraine, Kurt Volker, to Zelensky aide Andrei Yermak.
In a text 30 minutes before the Trump-Zelensky phone call, here's what is said. With Volker texting Andrei Yermak, a top aide to President Zelensky, "Good lunch. Thanks. Heard from White House. Assuming President Z convinces Trump he will investigate, quote, get to the bottom of what happened, unquote, in 2016, we will nail down date for visit to Washington. Good luck. See you tomorrow. Kurt."
So it's there in writing, no hearsay. Before the phone call, Trump's guy is conditioning a meeting on an announcement of a 2016 investigation. That's one example. Here's another one. On August 16th, the same Zelensky aide, Andrei Yermak, sends the Trump team a draft statement that Zelensky would read to comply with their demands. But Trump's people reply that it's not good enough. Again, these are written drafts of a Zelensky announcement, documentary evidence that Adam Schiff is describing.
The Yermak draft, the Ukrainian draft, says we intend to initiate and complete a transparent and unbiased investigation of all available facts and episodes, which in turn will prevent the recurrence of this problem in the future. That's pretty generic. But here's the Giuliani-Volker-Sondland response. This is what had to be included. We intend to initiate and complete a transparent and unbiased investigation of all available facts and episodes. Up to that point, it's exactly the same, until you get to including those involving Burisma and the 2016 U.S. elections. And then it goes back to the Ukrainian draft, which in turn will prevent the recurrence of this problem in the future. You can see in this such graphic evidence, Ukrainians did not want to do this. They didn't even want to mention this. Giuliani had to insist, no, we're not going to be satisfied with some generic statement. After all, I think we can see, this isn't about corruption. No, this isn't about announcing investigations to damage Biden and to promote this fiction about the last election.
Adam Schiff from the impeachment trial opening arguments yesterday. And before we go to Senator Murphy, I'll add one more thing. Schiff and company yesterday also used very specific clips of the witnesses from the House hearings. There were many such instances. Powerful stuff, no doubt, for people with open minds or who had not seen these stories before. Here's just one example. The famous statement by Trump's Russia expert Fiona Hill about what Trump's national security advisor John Bolton instructed her to do after a meeting between Trump people and Ukraine's people at the White House on July 10th.
A specific instruction was that I had to go to the lawyers, to John Eisenberg, our senior counsel for the National Security Council, to basically say, you tell Eisenberg, Ambassador Bolton told me, that I am not part of this whatever drug deal that Mulvaney and Sondland are cooking up.
Fiona Hill, from her House testimony as replayed for the Senate impeachment trial yesterday. So with that and the other examples, and I could play dozens more, you see how specific and comprehensive this presentation of the evidence is so far. With me now is Senator Chris Murphy, Connecticut Democrat, member of the Foreign Relations and Appropriations Committees, and someone who traveled to Ukraine with Republican Senator Ron Johnson just as this was about to break open publicly in early September. Senator Murphy, we appreciate this time today. Before you go back into lockdown in the Senate chamber, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I don't know if you heard much of my intro. I know you're getting to the phone, but I've been describing the case from Adam Schiff and company as a meticulous marshaling of evidence that shows how aid and meetings were conditioned on very specific announcements of investigating the Bidens and the 2016 election. What do you see as the significance of yesterday's presentation?
I think it makes the president's case impossible to the extent they're going to try to say the quid pro quo, the corruption scheme, never happened. It's still available to the president to argue that what happened is not impeachable conduct. But I think it narrows the scope of the argument that the president can make. I thought they did a really fantastic and devastating job of walking through this detailed TikTok to make sure that everybody understands when this corruption scheme began, how comprehensive it was, and how uncomfortable the Ukrainians were about it. That, I actually think, was one of the most effective pieces of the presentation, because when those emails and texts came out, the most salacious ones, were getting all the attention. But what you really see in that back and forth between Yermak and Sondland and Volker and others is that the Ukrainians didn't want to do this. They didn't want to do this. They tried to get out of it. They tried to do something that was less than what Giuliani required, because they knew it was wrong, because they knew it was fundamentally wrong. And in the end, in the very end, they finally gave in because the president's team and the president had made it clear that they were not getting their aid unless they did exactly what the president wanted, which was to announce these specific investigations into the president's political rivals. And I think a lot of that was probably new information for some of my colleagues, especially on the Republican side of the aisle. And I saw them listening yesterday. I remained skeptical that it changes their mind, but I saw them listening.
You say you saw them listening, but one of the problems for the pro-impeachment side, as I understand it, the reporting I've seen indicates that the Republicans just don't care, for one, and that up to 20 at a time weren't even in the room paying attention, which is contrary to the rules. How much is that your impression?
That was not my impression. I was paying close attention to who was there and who wasn't, and I think at any given time, all throughout the day yesterday, I would say 90 to 95 senators were in their seats, and those that weren't were usually just standing in the back, stretching their legs. So I really don't think there's a storyline here that either Republicans or Democrats aren't in that chamber listening. I thought the occasional absences were entirely normal, and regardless of what Republicans do in the end, I don't know that you can accuse them of not being in the chamber and not paying attention.
All right. That's interesting news coming from you. And here, for example, though, on shrugging it off, is Florida Republican Rick Scott. This is a very short clip from yesterday as played this morning on NPR's Morning Edition.
All they're doing is going through process because they don't have anything to do to attach anything to Donald Trump. They just hate the guy.
They just hate the guy. They don't have anything to attach to Donald Trump. Even after all those examples of documentary evidence and Fiona Hill's testimony that we played. So how does it feel when the House managers are presenting layers of evidence at such a level of detail that all seems to prove a point and it gets disrespected and shrugged off like that?
I mean, it's just infuriating and so scary. I mean, scary that you could walk away from that presentation yesterday and say that they got nothing. I mean, the details on this scheme, all presented by, folks with no political axe to grind. In fact, most of them people that are loyal to Donald Trump that were hired by him, they're still working for him. It just suggests a sort of political hackery from many Republicans that is scary to watch. And of course, the irony of all of this is that, at least half the Republicans in the Senate ran against Donald Trump. Some of them, traveled to Iowa specifically to campaign for anybody other than Donald Trump. So it's not as if, these are lifelong friends and believers in the president. They all warned their party, not all, many of them warned their party how dangerous he would be if he got elected elected president. Their party elected him anyway. And now all of a sudden they're blind to the warnings that they themselves were making just 3 or 4 years ago.
Senator, an article in the New York Times today all about the two sides' different strategies says the White House doesn't plan to mount much of a defense on the facts, rather on the assertion that they're ignoring them, and they say the process has been unfair to Trump, and the Democrats are out to get him. And the article says, quote, amplify it to a group that already believes it. Trump's core supporters, a bloc in the Republican Party that can threaten the political future of any Republican senator, unquote. If you agree that's their strategy, are you sunk?
Well, I mean, I think our chances were pretty slim to begin with that we were going to get 67 votes for impeachment. And, you know, it stands to reason that the president's team would focus more on process and spend more of their time attacking the House than disputing the facts, because after yesterday's presentation, you just can't dispute the facts. I mean, you just can't pretend like this conspiracy wasn't occurring. And it's just not credible, you know, to say that the president wasn't directing it all. He was. You know, I think you have to remember his context for all of this, where Republicans are coming from. Many, if not most, Republicans in the Senate don't like this president, but also believe that there is a grand conspiracy. The deep state combined with the liberal media that is attempting to destroy the conservative movement. And so I think you will see the president's manager play into that fear and belief, because it is real amongst many Republican senators, and it reflects a belief that is perpetuated by Fox News and InfoWars and Breitbart and all the rest of the media sources that unfortunately populate the days and nights of many conservative activists. So it's just, I think, an attempt by the Republican lawyers, if that's the way they go, to just feed a narrative that is already dominant and serves for Republican senators to kind of excuse the fact that they don't stand up to this president because they're fighting the bigger fight, which is against this outside and inside cabal that's organized against them.
Do you think then that House managers should be getting more direct in stating who they're talking to, like Senator Collins, Senator Gardner, Senator Ernst, Senator Tillis, people of Colorado and Maine and Iowa and North Carolina? Do you really want your senator just let this behavior slide without even hearing from John Bolton or seeing Ambassador Taylor's notes, you know, which Schiff did a version of yesterday, but without naming those swing states or swing state senators' names?
I don't think you need to call out senators by name. I frankly think that might be counterproductive and create a whole sort of, you know, sort of mini controversy that probably wouldn't be helpful. I mean, you know, the voters in those states are paying attention. Everybody's watching these hearings. Folks are plugged in. And I just think that whether or not you specifically target the message to swing state senators, it's pretty obvious. If they, you know, vote to rig the trial and then vote to acquit the president, there's a lot of middle-of-the-road voters who aren't going to be happy about that. And, of course, we haven't talked about, you know, that piece of this. We still have, you know, one vote or a series of votes coming up on, you know, whether we're going to have an actual trial with witnesses and documents. And in many ways, you know, that might be just as important a vote as the final vote for a lot of these senators who are in swing states, you know, with decent populations that still support the president. But many of those presidential supporters also don't think the trial should be rigged.
Let's hear from a couple of your constituents. Carol in Wilton, Connecticut, you're on the air. Hi, Carol.
Hi. Thanks for having me. And Senator Murphy, it's good to hear you there. My big question is, there were several times during the House manager's presentation yesterday when the president's lead attorney, Cipollone, was basically directly implicated in some of the malfeasance here. I think particularly in holding on to the whistleblower report, and I can't remember several of the other instances, but it happened, and I just wondered, how does that work? I mean, does Cipollone, he's almost a witness to the events. How does that work?
Well, it's a great question. It's curious to decide to put in charge of your defense one of the individuals who was part of the conspiracy. Cipollone is not on our short list of witnesses that we want evidence from, but he certainly is part and parcel of the obstruction campaign, if not the original conspiracy to rig the 2020 election. A curious decision to make Cipollone your lead lawyer. I ultimately don't know that we're going to try to contest that. I'm not sure that we would, come anywhere close to winning that vote with Republicans.
When this all started, I said on the show that the evidence, even from the beginning, even from, the first weeks of this, it seemed so clear that what was done, that this had to inevitably go to, Trump did a bad thing here, but it doesn't rise to the level of impeachment. And then Trump insisted that the Republicans stand with him in saying the call was perfect and he didn't do anything at all wrong. And they've twisted themselves into pretzels to try to do that. How much do you think we are headed, ultimately, for many of your Republican colleagues, if they do not vote to remove, saying, he did a bad thing, but this is not worth undoing an election for?
I think there may be. Listen, I don't know. Obviously, I don't know what Republicans are going to say when this is all said and done. But from what they have said in the past, it's unlikely many of them are going to come to the conclusion that what he did was a corruption, but it wasn't worthy of impeachment. I think that's a hard argument to make because, once you can see that the president was holding up hundreds of millions of dollars in taxpayer funds to try to get political help for his campaign, I think most voters, if they believe that you believe that happened, would want you to vote to impeach. So I think in the end, most Republicans will likely suggest that this didn't happen, or if it did happen, the president didn't know about it. I do not think that we will be able to separate those questions in votes. My impression is that, this will be an up or down vote in the end on removal or acquittal. Senator McConnell will likely be able to control the terms of that final debate, and it'll then be up to individual senators to explain why they voted the way that they did. But unlikely that we're going to have separate questions on the fact set and then the appropriateness of removal.
Right. It'll be up to reporters, frankly, to ask those questions.
That's right.
There was reporting yesterday about a possible witness reciprocity deal. Maybe the Republicans will give you Mulvaney and Bolton, for example, if you give them Joe and Hunter Biden. Now I hear this potential deal is dead. Can you confirm that it's been discussed in your circles?
No, it hasn't been discussed. I mean, this is so maddening. I mean, I understand that there's a million reporters around here, and everybody's got to file a story, and you're going to want to file ones that sound more interesting and salacious than others. But this story that was running around yesterday that I got asked about a dozen times about a deal for Hunter Biden and John Bolton, it literally doesn't exist. Like, that conversation never happened between Republicans and Democrats. Some Republicans might have floated it themselves, but that was never a conversation that should not be on the table and is not and won't be on the table because we shouldn't be trading relevant fact witnesses for Fox News conspiracy witnesses. This is about whether or not the charges in the House impeachment articles warrant removal. It's not about whether the stuff that Laura Ingraham and Sean Hannity put on TV every night is true or false. And so I sort of got madder as the day went on yesterday as I got more and more questions about this because it really was just about an interesting story for reporters, not about a conversation that was actually happening. And Senator Schumer made that pretty clear as the day went on.
Is there any argument to make that it might be worth a kind of Hail Mary pass in that direction if you think it's inevitably going, as it is, to acquittal of the president almost inevitably, and potentially the net effect of that kind of witness reciprocity would be to make the president look more guilty, not less, because Bolton would come up and call it a drug deal, and then they don't have any actual corruption to tar Joe Biden with. Why would that not be a good strategy?
Well, part of it is that it sets this precedent about what impeachment trials are and aren't about. If you allow for, you know, totally extraneous material that is just designed to damage the president's political opponents to come into a trial, then I think it turns these into circuses. Remember, they want Hunter Biden and Joe Biden not to help prove their case, but because they are still focused on destroying who the individual who today is still likely the strongest candidate against the president in the general election. Right as we speak, Rudy Giuliani is still running a campaign overseas to try to dig up dirt on the Bidens, and he's been very clear about that. The president has been clear that he's still involved in it. So, you know, we can't allow the president to use the impeachment trial as a continued platform to do the exact kind of corruption that he is being impeached for. That would be bad today, and it'd be a bad precedent to set.
It was revealed last night in the session that there's a classified document that senators can see from Jennifer Williams, aide to Vice President Pence, who testified in the House hearings. Have you seen that document yet, or can confirm that it exists?
I haven't seen it. I mean, I certainly assume it exists. I have not seen it yet. I will. I likely will right before the trial begins today or at the end of the day, but I have not seen it yet.
Now, I have to get your take on one more impeachment trial issue. I know you're an outspoken opponent of torture. So how do you feel about these rules that only allow senators to drink water or milk during the proceedings, notably that excludes coffee?
There is, I'm not a coffee drinker, so that doesn't bother me. B, there's a rumor yet to be confirmed that the rule is actually clear liquids and milk, because you can have flat or still water. And so if you can have any clear liquid, then that opens up all sorts of possibilities that some of us may avail of once the president's lawyers start to begin their testimony.
Do you know the history of this? I read up on it yesterday. It used to be just water. Until in the 1960s, then Senate Minority Leader Everett Dirksen, Republican from Illinois, got his favorite drink, milk, included. And it made me think, isn't there a senator with enough clout who's a coffee drinker?
Yeah, I mean, I think you then get into, you know, a really messy, complicated debate about, you know, how many different things should be on the Senate floor. I'll make a case for diet soda, and then, you know, all of a sudden the traditions and the solemnity of the Senate are out the window.
Senator Chris Murphy, thank you so much for your time. Good luck in there today.
Appreciate it.
Again, listeners, you can call and ask an impeachment news question. Just leave a voicemail anytime, including your name and where you're calling from, and some of you will hear your questions on the show. The number is 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-TALK or 844-745-8255. Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from my live daily radio show, which we also invite you to listen to. It's The Brian Lehrer Show, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, streaming live then at WNYC.org. See you tomorrow.